Hey listeners, it's Jenny Nash. At Author Accelerator, we're on a mission to lead the emerging book coaching industry by setting a standard for excellence. We've certified more than 300 book coaches who are working all over the world to guide and support all kinds of writers. I have a brand new class on the three keys to building a successful book coaching business. It's free and on demand. And during the training, I make a juicy offer that has to do with coming and talking to me about what your book coaching business might be. So if you've been thinking that book coaching sounds like something you like to do, come learn more about it. You can check out the new training at bookcoaches.com/coaches. That's bookcoaches.com/coaches. I hope to see you there.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
I am beyond excited for you two because you had a killer opening, I would say opening weekend, like for a movie, but pub week. You had a great, pub month. And I want to talk about a couple of things today. I want to talk about working from far away from each other, not that that matters as much now that we have the ability to do everything on Zoom. But I also want to just talk about co-writing because co-writing intrigues me as a control freak and as someone who feels like I have a pretty distinctive voice, and also as someone who happens to co-host this podcast with someone who co-writes and loves co-writing. So I really just want to get into the nuts and bolts. Let's talk about first, I guess, how you guys got together, Jenny and Rebecca, how you two got together. And if you could just sort of say your name, say who you are the first time you talk so the listeners can get to know which voice is which.
Sure. Thank you, Jess, for having us on. We're so thrilled to be here. And you have been a great, incredible behind the scenes support. And I will say for myself, at least, the podcast has been incredible. You guys are doing wonderful service to authors.
And this is Rebecca Winthrop speaking.
And this is Rebecca. And I work at the Brookings Institution. And shall I pass to Jenny and then we can say how we got together?
Sure.
This is Jenny Anderson, also super excited to be here, a longtime fan of Jess's work, your work, Jess, and still refer to and like have marked up and destroyed my copy of The Gift of Failure. I think it was probably the book that most inspired me in this space, that and The Gardener and the Carpenter, in terms of like books in this space that can have a tremendous impact and realizing how it can change how you think about something really profound and that will help kids.
I love The Gardener and the Carpenter, too. I think that's just a really wonderful book. I did an intro and introduced you guys, and so the listeners are sort of aware of who you are. And I mentioned before that this is about co-writing, but the other thing I want to get into at some point is that you come at this from slightly different angles, which I'm really interested to hear about. So tell me how you guys got paired up in the first place.
So I have worked my whole life in research and programs, and sort of using evidence to help policymakers and practitioners to help kids learn better and feel better. And one of the areas I'd been working on for many years was supporting families and parents. And I knew the power of families and parents. They're very overlooked in the education system. And I realized during COVID, I had a personal aha that it's very hard for parents to see how engaged their kids are because grades really tell half of the story. And I misjudged my own kids. My eldest one, I thought, oh, when COVID hit and we stayed home and he had to, you know, he went pass fail and online, I thought, oh, he'll be fine. He got straight A's all the time, was happy to go to school, but not so, totally lost all his motivation. And I realized he wasn't engaged in learning, really. He was engaged in getting good grades. And then my little one, who I thought I was going to have to worry about because he had struggled mightily in school, ended up, he was dyslexic, had ADHD, had basically internalized he was stupid, given up, stopped trying altogether, talking about the gift of failure. Mm-hmm. But the minute he stayed home and didn't have to keep up with his peers, I realized he was actually super motivated, engaged. He just needed a new environment. And he was on it every day, got up, made a list, got himself dressed, loved it, and caught up to grade levels. And I thought, gosh, we really do not do a good job of showing parents what good learning looks like. And I knew stories had to be part of that and storytelling. And Jenny was my favorite ed journalist. She had a global perspective. I just really loved her work. And so I basically went begging to her, and it took a while, but she eventually said yes.
We could do an entire show on the quote, "We don't do a good job of showing parents what good learning is." And you, that, just that. Just, oh, we're done now. We can just go. Okay, Jenny, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got involved?
Sure. I've been a journalist for so many years. I think I've been saying 25, but it's closer to 30. A lot of that time was spent in finance journalism, which I really loved. Super interesting, very fast-paced and intense. A lot of that was at the New York Times. So I kind of knew what it was like to be on a very well-resourced desk with intense demands. And when I had my kids, my interests changed. I wasn't as interested in the world of money. It was also the schedule was totally unrelenting. And I wanted to do more learning and development and education. And there isn't really that desk. So I kind of went to education and thought, oh, this will be amazing. And I was just shocked at how little time and attention went to it. I think at that time, we're talking around 2010, it was, KJ was actually doing probably some of the best work there was, with Motherload, which had originally been Lisa Belkin. And so to me, I read that, kind of and watched that, but it was like the mommy blog sphere. And it was like, why isn't this a, which was great, and I love it. It's like an that was where I was spending all my time and doing all my learning. But I was a little pissed off that major media really just didn't seem to think that kind of the development of human beings was an important beat and something that they would invest a lot of time and money into. So I ended up leaving. I quit the New York Times and I joined Quartz, which did let me do that. They kind of let me kind of get creative and interdisciplinary with beats. And I was looking at the science of learning and the future of schools and neuroscience of babies, and they kind of let me create these verticals, which to me felt more reader, like more servicey to readers, like questions readers are having, problems readers are having in their lives. And so when Rebecca came along, it just felt like this. I had seen the hole in the market around kind of, there's a lot around supporting teens in emotionally, but not as much around supporting teens in their learning. So I just got very excited by that prospect. And of course, Rebecca's expertise was sort of spectacular. So I did say no, because I've written a book and it was really hard and I didn't want to do it again. But she is very persuasive. And I really did think that it was something that I selfishly wanted to know. So it was like, well, okay, if not us, then whom? Right? Like it was our chance to do it. And so we dug in.
Okay, so you have this idea for this book. Did you both come at it with the same idea, or did you sort of talk about what the ideas could be first?
Oh my gosh, Jenny. We have not done a podcast that has excavated the very long,
This is what
circuitous
this podcast is about that. It's about like
process.
the
And so
process, the nuts and
I
bolts.
Jenny, do you want to take that? I mean, I think my
I
main
can,
thing,
yeah.
the main thing is to say this was not a linear process.
Okay. All right.
Go, Jenny.
I
You
like
start and I'll add in.
Yeah, well, there's actually a piece of this. I don't even know if you know this, but I had actually submitted a book proposal on sort of why we need better communities. Like
Yes.
why the disintegration of communities was.
Are you telling me, Jenny, if I knew this?
Yeah, no, I just didn't know if you remembered it. So I
No,
had sent
yeah. You, I read
I
it. I
had
read your proposal and gave comments. Long, I remember
long spoons.
that.
Oh, God. Okay. So there we go. I don't remember that. This is how far back it goes. Anyway, so
Right.
I wrote that, and the feedback I got from my publisher was like, so Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle and David Brooks are really on these topics, who were in the stable of the publisher I was pitching to. Like, I don't think this is going to do it. Like, what else are you jazzed about? And sort of science of learning was the other thing I was jazzed about. And Rebecca had been suggesting this. And then we just set a weekly meeting. It was Wednesdays,
Yes.
to sort of hash out, is there an idea there?
I love
And
that.
ended up spending almost a year developing a proposal. And
Oh,
it,
that's
um,
fantastic. That's
and
my timeline. A year. That's what I take.
that is not the word I associate with that year, but okay. We can go with fantastic.
I think I have to say I have gotten to the point, and I don't know if this is like, I have sort of one of what is it called, the Stockholm syndrome when it comes to proposals, but I've come to find the process really gratifying and really clarifying. Is there a lot of time sunk into something that may never work? Absolutely, absolutely. But boy, by the time you get to writing the book, you're grounded in at least an idea. And so I love, and normally when I'm fleshing this stuff out, like I'm talking to my editor, okay, I mean my agent occasionally, but to the idea of having someone else to bounce ideas off of, I've resorted to having to bounce ideas off of ChatGPT. And because often I don't have someone in the same headspace to talk about these ideas with. So I'm very jealous of that process.
Well, that wasn't even, that was like the beginning, because then we submitted a proposal and they bought the proposal, which is a book about school design. What are the optimal conditions for learning and what does that look like out in the world?
Okay, so that was a year but it wasn't lost. Like we definitely don't think of these this as lost time. And in fact, by the way, I refer to that as tuition. So like there is even a story that someone else told recently where it was Jenny Nash. She did this thing. It was a bit of a boo-boo. She made a mistake. She made some errors. And I handed her $1 and I said, here's my contribution to your fund for how much that boo-boo costs, because I've now learned and won't make that mistake ever again. So for me, all of that time sunk into something that never goes somewhere. It's still kind of tuition. It'll link into something somewhere else, I guarantee it.
I
I'll
mean,
add one thought and then pass it over to Rebecca. But what finish.
ended up happening was us realizing, and maybe this will save some future, some of your authors some time. We realized that what we wanted to write, and I think it would have been in a very interesting book. Our proposal was like solid. It had some great examples. It was very well reported out. But what we realized is we would be offering to parents a vision of education that many of them couldn't access. And that actually
Oh, right.
felt mean. And we were like,
Yeah.
we know these exist and it's important to
Yeah.
highlight them. But is our theory of change that by knowing about them, something good happens? And it didn't feel to, I don't know, Rebecca, does that resonate with you? I think we wanted something that would be
Yeah.
more empowering for parents versus something that was like, oh God, I wish my kid could go to that school.
Yeah. I mean, first off, I'll say I love your frame, Jess, of tuition. That was not, and I think Jenny, I'm answering for you correctly because we talked a lot about it. That was not the frame that the two of us took at the time. But I think what I learned is it takes time to develop a proposal. Jenny had a prior experience with her other book. I don't know how she, it was a miraculous moment. She and her brilliant co-author, the previous book she did, which is an awesome book. I think they wrote the proposal in, I don't know, 5 minutes, and then they got an agent and sold it in like 2 minutes. And so Jenny had that time frame in her mind. I had never done a trade book. I had only done policy books where I actually got very lucky. I never did a proposal. Like I just was like, here's the book, I'm pitching it. And they were like, great, we'll publish it. So like I had no experience. And what I learned is if I had to do it over again, I would take the idea of tuition very seriously and say it unfolds with its own time frame. Because like ideas are things you don't just pluck out of thin air. Like they have to germinate, they have to congeal. And like maybe we would have gone faster, Jenny and I, if we'd done it separately, done two separate books. But like it would not have been what we came out with for the disengaged teen, and I don't think it would have nearly been as good because we really supported each other. And that process of like mucking around, and in generally, I was like, my frame that first year was like, what do you mean, Jenny, that nobody's going to care about this? Everyone should care about this. She's like, that's so wonky. No one's going to care about this. Like that was sort of my memory of the conversation. She's like, nope, not a good angle. Nope, no
Well,
story there.
yeah,
And
and
I'm
it
like,
felt
everyone should care. Like, I thought everything was interesting. But just that process of mucking about, getting a rhythm together, finding a way, I think, to work together and like merge a little bit our brains probably did pay off. And that I
Yeah,
would in
that
the
I'd say
future, like, yeah.
that took 2 years, I would
Yeah.
say. It took a year to figure out what our idea was, at
Yeah.
least, maybe more, and then
I
another
agree.
year to figure out how to actually write a book
Once we
together.
started writing, because we were just writing the proposal where we would sort of divvy up and then.
And I will say, like, I had never, so journalists are very good at sort of seeing something happening, seeing patterns happening, and maybe putting, hopefully in the best case, putting things together that other people haven't put together. That's kind of an idea scoop, or like covering something that's happening. But I had never created, at least not since college, grad school. Like I hadn't created a framework and created new knowledge, and that was very new and deeply uncomfortable for me. Like, cannot tell you. So it was so reassuring to have someone who A, knew how to do that, and B, was like, this is the process. And I was like, this
This is what we
process
do.
sucks. Like,
Yeah,
I hate
yeah.
this process. Like, how do we even know if it's right? Like
Right.
this. And Rebecca was like, we have ways.
There's
Yeah,
research methodology.
yeah. Well, that's really helpful. I mean, for a lot of people, one of the things we talk about a lot on this podcast is getting into your expert voice and how you do that and how you own it. And there is a process of, I feel like, earning it for me anyway. Certainly what I thought the gift of failure was going to be on day one versus when the proposal finally went in, totally different. But in the meantime, and addiction inoculation even more so because I was learning an entire new field. It took me a full year just to be ready to write the proposal. And that was because I read every single thing I can get my hands on and then winnow out what needs to be there and what doesn't. But I think it's really, it sounds, I almost hesitate to tell people how long these things can take sometimes because it sounds so discouraging. But on the other hand, if you love the research or and the process and all of that sort of stuff, which I hope you can at least gain an appreciation for that process because I think it's a really fulfilling and fun, anyway, for me, process.
I think it's frustrating, but in the end, deeply rewarding at the end. But like when, I wouldn't say, hey, this is the funnest thing you'll do in your life. Like just, for people who might be starting it fresh, don't expect, you're just going to be like, this is amazing. But that, I have to say, as a researcher, that's true for anything I've ever written. And I'm often creating new frameworks, new ideas, new theories, new, and like there is always like, a good tooth, good 50% in the middle, which is frustrating, hard, bang your head against the wall, trying to figure out how, what it all means. And, it's hard, but like excitement at the beginning with the idea. And then at the end, when light emerges, it feels so good.
All right. So proposal. So you sell the book, and I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of contracts and writing as a team sort of stuff. But what I would love to talk a little bit about is how you decide who's going to write what. In fiction, Serena Bowen, my co-host, has written with Elle Kennedy quite a bit and another person as well. And they alternate chapters for the most part, which is interesting to me because then your style has to match. And so what I do as a game, when I'm listening, especially when I'm listening to Serena Bowen's books, is try to pick out which chapters Serena wrote and which chapters Elle wrote. And because I know Serena so well, I can do it, but they're generally speaking so good at matching. So how did you do this? Because I would assume, Jenny has a very established writing style and you have a more established academic writing style. So how did you dovetail those, your two styles and your process and your writing together?
Oh my
Well,
gosh, this
it's
was
that,
probably
yeah.
the hardest piece. This was part the
This is
hardest.
a very painful. Yeah, this was like us trying to that it, a very sort of authentic creative process. We did start out by alternating chapters and found it very frustrating because I was trying to get it into a very particular kind of voice. And also, my chapters just really needed a lot of work. And so, what we eventually landed on was I sort of led on the writing, and then Rebecca kind of came in and was like, really kind of shaped it from the inside out. And then would I would so then she would rewrite everything I'd done, and then I would kind of rewrite that again. So every chapter kind of would go in a circle. But I think it was really trying to figure out, it took us a while to sort of figure out the our comparative advantages, right? And I think my comparative advantage was sort of the voice and the writing, and Rebecca's, I
And
mean,
the storytelling, like
we
really
were
the
both
characters, the,
doing a lot of that. And again, but like I felt like I learned a lot from you
Yeah,
about.
we both did. I think it was a really like I learned a ton from this process, like way more working with Jenny. about writing, about storytelling, about what makes a good book than I would have if I'd done it alone, for sure. And, hired a helper, editor type, person. And I think a couple of insights were, we were like, this is perfect. Rebecca's research, Jenny's storytelling, like, it's great. Like, Jenny loves to like get the stories in her journalism, and then she goes down to the data and elucidates it via the story. And Rebecca like goes with all the research and comes up with the ideas and then illuminates it with a story. We'll just meet in the middle. Like, on paper, that sounds lovely. In practice, soup that middle, what I think we both realized, because at the beginning, I would write stuff. Because I take a long, I'm actually a very slow writer. For doing a lot of writing in my professional life, I am a slow writer. And I was like, let me just write without caring how it sounds and getting it out. Not bullets, but almost. You know what I mean? Like, here is the information. This is the argument. This is what we want to say. And I would send it to Jen. This is at the beginning. And I, Jenny, I'm not sure if you remember this, like the Finn like intro, and like, and then the idea in our mind on paper was like, and then Jenny will go through and rewrite it and make it sound great and bring it to life. But I think what we realized is we both are used to thinking through the process of writing. This very much gets to a lot of what you talk about on, like, the act of writing makes us have ideas and figure out how the page should unfold, and for me, how the argument should unfold. And so we did end up, we got to what Jenny said, which was not efficient. So we spent a lot of time angsting over the fact that it wasn't efficient. But by the end, I think we got into rhythm. We're like, well, this is how it is. Like,
Yeah, there's no
one
other way.
pass, and then I go in and literally rewrite it, and then Jenny goes back and then rewrites it again, this time for real. Like, and we
Yeah.
probably did each chapter four times, honestly.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not
And then
surprised
would
by
send it
that.
off to the editor. Like, it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, boom. Yeah.
And as you're, so that's another part of the process that I'm always interested by. On my first book, I wrote the entire thing and sent it to my editor. I will never do that ever again. And then on my second book, I think I sent two chapters at a time, which I loved. And that way I didn't have to waste all that time figuring out that I was on the wrong track before, being told you're on the wrong track and being able to fix it. So how did you operate with your editor?
We did do that. We decided just because I had had actually a very similar experience to you. I had submitted the first half of a book, and this was when I was like working full time and had very young babies and was writing this book on the side, like at the New York Times. It was nuts. And I handed in the whole book, and they were like, "We love it. It's great." And then like a month later, they came back and they were like, "This doesn't work at all. You need to redo the whole first half." And I was like, "Wait, what?" I was not expecting that at all. And it was like so demoralizing. And so this time I specifically asked the editor that we submit chapters, and we were still really much trying to figure out a format. And so we figured out we did send chapters, a couple, I think actually each chapter. It was like a chapter, and then it was clear once we had a chapter figured out that was going to be the model for every other chapter. So then we didn't have to do all the others because we had these four modes. And so we sort of did that. But then when we handed in our first draft, they really liked the modes and they really liked the structure of the first half, but they wanted us to rewrite the whole second half. So that was again demoralizing because I thought I had done everything in my power to prevent that happening again, and the exact same thing happened again.
Well, where you were working with it, this was a new editor, correct? That different from the one you wrote your first book with.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Right.
I
And
think.
there's this process of getting to know each other that's a
Yeah.
very real thing, which is why I went into a bit of a funk when my editor retired. So yeah, it's she and I had a vibe. We knew
Yeah.
how to work together, so it's
Yeah.
hard to learn how to work with new people.
And I will say that, the other thing, I learned so many things from this process. The other thing I learned was, it's very frustrating when you spend all this time and then you give it in. They're like, we love the first half, rewrite the entire second half. Even though we had been in touch, it wasn't like it was brand new to, and we're like, but you saw this already. What do you mean? And it's frustrating, and sometimes you feel like fighting it and making an argument back, but that it's really worthwhile stepping back and pausing. They were totally right. They were 100% right. And they even needed sort of a moment and fresh eyes to see it all together to realize that the second
Right.
half didn't work. Because it wasn't like we hadn't shown them the second half. You know, they'd seen it all along, but then just to see it all together, and it made the book way, way better. It took us a lot longer, and we had to get an extension and all sorts of things, and it made the book way better.
Isn't that infuriating when they're right? I mean, I would get the edits back and I'm like, oh, what is she thinking? And then I would sit with it for a
Yeah,
couple days.
you have to let it pass over you, like wash over you, take a deep breath, go for a walk the following week, then
Right.
take a real. Yeah. That's my approach at least.
I never open edits unless like I've had a snack. Like you don't want to edit the open up edits as you're like walking out the door and you're harried and stuff like that. You got to be mentally prepared to open edits. So I'm assuming then that in terms of like the rest of the process, the copy edits and all that sort of stuff, there are lots of files flying back and forth. Are you gonna sit here and tell me that you never ever accidentally worked on the wrong file, or were you guys super organized and always had the exact right version of every file?
I don't, of all the many things that went wrong with this process, and many, many did, I don't recall a version. Am I misremembering?
I've done it. I've done it. It's so painful.
I am used to running large research projects with teams. And
Gotcha.
so the one thing I made Jenny do, which I'm internally grateful for because it was my system, I could manage it. Is make her do Microsoft Word so we could use SharePoint rather than Google Docs and Drives, because I
Can we pause for one second?
yeah.
This is a new moment for me. I don't know what SharePoint is, and I'm
Ah.
assuming then there are some listeners who
No
don't know
one
what
does.
SharePoint is.
Rebecca is under the impression that everyone uses
Yeah.
this
No.
software. I'm like, yeah, no one's ever
Okay.
heard of
I was
Guys.
assuming you were going to say track changes or something, and
No,
I'm like, okay, I know
guys.
what that is. What's
Let me
this?
just tell you, there's a company I want to tell you about them. They're called
Okay.
Microsoft. And in fact, gajillions of people use their software package.
No authors, but yes, gajillions of other people.
And in
Nonprofit, apparently, and
fact,
nonprofits. This is a big deal.
businesses, come on, corporate, like, yes, lots of people. They do have many clients, this big company called Microsoft. Anyways, it's all it is an alternative to like Google. There's the Google suite, there's the Microsoft suite, and I was all set up with Microsoft, and at work had Microsoft, because that's what our company uses, our organization, our nonprofit. So basically, the point of the story is, regardless of whatever software you use, it doesn't even matter. But I have many years of having had version control problems on large reports. So I was quite, we had a whole system. That I agree with Jenny. There was maybe one or two cases of small, like a couple paragraphs that, you know, by email I had gotten the wrong version. But not, in general, having made the mistake in past lives of like doing extensive work on the wrong version and
Yeah.
having to go
This
backwards,
sounds really familiar. I
going
feel like I've
backwards
edited.
and
Yeah.
redo the whole
Yeah.
effing thing. Like we
Okay.
were pretty
So
organized on that front.
SharePoint is essentially like Google Drive, just
It's
a
Google.
Microsoft product.
Yes,
Okay. All
it
right.
doesn't matter.
Incredibly
Okay.
not intuitive or easy to use. I mean, when I at some point I said to my family, I'm going to make a list, because one of the things we talk about in our book is like explore skills, you know, the sort of like confidence to proactively go learn new things and be agentic. And I was like, the list of things I had to learn for this book,
Interesting.
from mail merges to SharePoint to, a whole new operating system. I was like, I had a lot of explore moments.
Did you use an app for your for keeping track of your sources, like a bookends or end notes? What do you use, Rebecca?
We use a bunch of stuff in work, but in this case, we did not. And I would the source citations, Jenny knows, was like my living nightmare.
It's a mess. It is
I kept telling
so
her, I was like, I just
horrible.
want you to know this is giving me heartburn every day. So EndNotes is a common one that we use in other projects. We didn't in this one, in this project, and we should have. That is one of the things we should have done.
One piece of information, one piece of advice I always give people is don't just use it, but actually know how to use it right before
Oh,
you
it's so
start,
helpful.
because I used it wrong. And there was a lot of untangling that had to happen at the publisher with my, and I feel so bad for the person who had to figure it out because it was a mess. So if you're going to use EndNotes, if you're going to use bookends, whatever you're going to use, learn how to like actually use it rather than guessing, because I did that. Learn from my mistakes. Flatten your learning curve with my mistakes. So there we go. Anything, just as we're going to start finishing up and wrapping things up, is there anything, having done this experience, that you would do differently next time that you wish you'd done from the beginning, when it comes to either the partnership or just the process?
Rebecca, do you remember clearing?
Yeah, that was lovely.
I know. So we have some friends who are just some of the most brilliant storytellers in the world. They run a company called Narrative, and when they saw that we were going into this creative process, they introduced us to this practice of clearing, which is you essentially you set an amount of time, 1 minute, 2 minutes, to clear before you're going to do creative work together. So you just sort of say where you are. Like, I distinctly remember the first time we did it, we had just gotten a new puppy, and I was like super stressing about how am I going to write this book and have this puppy, and this puppy seems super distracting and it's really cute, but it's also like very needy and like, and so I was just clearing that to sort of explain how I was present for the work we were going to be doing together. We did not end up using the, we were so time starved. It felt like the whole project, we were just always racing against a clock and time difference and all this stuff. But it was, if I were doing it all over again, I would literally say, let's spend 1 minute clearing every time, because I think we would have, there a lot of emotion builds up in a process like this. We were each going through a lot of different things. My mother had a terrible accident. I lost my job. Like, there was just so much stuff happening that clearing process, I think, for a collaboration, to me, would have been really helpful.
What does it look like in practice? Just a couple of minutes of what?
So basically, they call the exercise they do, and Jenny and I were at a conference, and they trained us and the rest of the people. Shout out to Oppie. It's called Clear Your Listening, and you literally just the other person is just listening. I take a minute, Jenny takes a minute, and it's just like So if I cleared my listening right now, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so excited to do this podcast with Jess. And oh my gosh, this is really fun to like think back with Jenny about the process, which was intense and rewarding and frustrating and exciting. And I'm actually really stressed about catching my train. And I hope we end on time. And I still have to pack because I'm actually in New York. And do you know what I mean? Like, these are the things going through my mind that is getting in the way of being present. Is
Nice.
basically it. You just get it out, blah, 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 blah. And then if there's anything to, re they don't have to do anything, they can just listen. And then Jenny can go. And then afterwards, if there's something to talk about, like Jenny is really stressing me, Jenny, you're making me very nervous by tapping your feet. And I don't know, whatever. We could talk about it afterwards. It's a really good process. And I ended up using it on my own every morning. And now I still do. Every morning,
Fascinating. I like
I
it.
do, my little meditation, and I end by clearing and clear your listening, which is literally the stuff that's going on in your head. And then you can pick the other thing they say is to pick at the end of clearing, pick a word or two that you,
Intention.
it's like kind of intention for the day, but they're like, you could clear right before a big meeting. Like, oh my God, I'm nervous. Is my PowerPoint going to work? I haven't met these people. Oh my God, do I have salad in my teeth? Okay, focus or like, connect or whatever it is, like it's just to center yourself. But I agree with Jenny. We did it a couple of times when we were particularly stressed about stuff. I was, I have a big job and I'm like constantly running, dealing with all sorts of things in my job, and Jenny has all sorts of things going on, and we, tried to compartmentalize as much as possible, but it would always blur in. And I agree that doing that like just as a practice would have been
That sounds
a
really
good
great.
idea.
If I think pairing that, I was every the whole time you're talking about how you start, one of the things that I've tried to adopt is a thing that Serena Bowen does when she's finishing for the day is just write a couple sentence down about where she plans to go next and just picking up for the next day. And I've tried really hard to adopt that, and it has made picking up the next day so much easier for me because transitions can be hard for me. And boy, if I was doing those two things together, I feel like that would be really productive for me. I'm going to try that out. Clearing before and pre-writing after.
I like
I think that
this.
would be
I would
good.
also add one. I would add one other thing. It took us a long time to, Rebecca, I don't even know if you're going to remember this, but towards the very end of the process, I think like just a couple months ago, we were talking about sort of talking points and communicating some major issues from the book. And Rebecca said, I said something along the lines of sort of, if the language isn't there, I kind of sometimes struggle to show up for the idea. Like the language is what brings me in and allows me to stay there, which would make sense that I'm a writer. So there's a logic here. And Rebecca said, oh, for me, it's the idea. Like, I don't really care. Of course you care, but like, that's not how I get to the idea. And it was such an aha moment to me for like the past 3 years that to me, if I couldn't make it sound right and I couldn't find a way to access other people and bring them with us, it didn't matter. And it was like this kind of like do or die, are the words right? And I think Rebecca was just always looking at me like, but they're such good ideas. Like, so it's okay. Like, what, where's all the stress? And I just realized it was like we had walked through the world so differently for 30 years. And that had been a source of tension. And I don't know what I think the prompt at the beginning for collaboration would be like, what are your like sacreds? Like, what are the things that matter so much to you? And then let's recognize that in the other person and then honor it in whatever way so that it doesn't feel a little bit trampled upon or that we are just elevating each other versus kind of maybe sometimes butting heads.
Oh, I love that. I've never heard that articulated that way. The idea of coming at it from the language first as opposed to from the ideas first. I think I'm probably more like Rebecca, so I'd never like the words will come. It's just if the ideas are. Yeah, that's interesting. I've never ever heard that before, and I love a new moment like that. So thank you so much, Jenny. That's fantastic. So anything else you'd like to talk about before we close up? We've gone, on the longish side, but there's so many things that we could talk about. Is there any place that you would like to direct listeners? We're going to have show notes for this, and I'm going to direct people to everything we've talked about. But Jenny, where can people find your work?
Sure. Instagram at Jenny Anderson Writes, Substack, How to Be Brave.
Nice.
And then I do a lot of freelance work. So, but I post it all on Instagram and LinkedIn. Oh, LinkedIn, at Jenny Anderson NYT.
Cool. Rebecca, where can people find you?
Well, first off, Jenny and I have a shared book website, which people
Lovely.
should go to. It's called thedisengagedteen.com with all our stuff on it, our joint stuff on it. And they can follow me on LinkedIn. I have a newsletter called Winthrop's World of Education. Thank you to my colleague Ashley, who named it. And she hadn't heard of Wayne's World. And I was like, are you sure? She's like, yes. So generational.
And
And
you're doing that on LinkedIn?
LinkedIn newsletter.
Really interesting. You're the first person I've talked to who's doing a LinkedIn newsletter. Everyone sort of on this, everyone, most people that I know are doing Substack. Jenny is doing Substack. I'm doing Substack. But I'm excited to go look at your newsletter because I have not peeked at those yet.
LinkedIn newsletters. It's also like this company, Microsoft. There is this thing called LinkedIn newsletters that do exist. Different worlds. The creative journalistic writer types are on Google and Substack. And then I have a website, RebeccaWinthrop.com, and on Instagram at Dr. Rebecca Winthrop, and
And I will
at
link to all of that.
Brookings.edu. Also, people can find me. So.
I will link to all of that. Maybe sometime you guys can come back and we can talk a little bit about about newsletters, Substack, LinkedIn, all the things.
Absolutely.
Everyone right now is sort of feeling this, all these new spaces out. I
I
love it. I
know.
love that there's ways to find people's work in an organized manner out there, and that we can subscribe to the things we want to be reading about. So anyway, thank you both so much. The Disengaged Teen, I think, is one of the best education slash parenting books to come out in a while. It approaches, it's one of the hardest things to articulate to parents the stuff that they're not seeing and how important it is to orient your thinking around maybe not, you know, what the grades are saying or, you know, what the scores are saying, but whether or not the learning is actually happening. And it's so hard to orient your brain around that because you don't, you're not a, but the parent's not there. They're not there to see or hear or understand that. So this is a fascinating book, I think an essential read, both for educators and for parents. And I highly, highly recommend it. So I'm so proud of both of you. I'm so happy for both of you. And congratulations again on a great book launch.
Well,
Thank
thank
you
you
for
for
all
all
your
your support along the
support.
way.
You are so welcome. And until next week, everyone, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Save. Pause. Stop.